Numbers, chapters 1 through 3. We'll also leap forward to consider a portion of chapter 26. If you're just joining us here at the beginning of the book of Numbers, my recommendation is that you go back and listen to some other messages first. Numbers is the fourth book of the Bible, and is also the fourth book of the first set of five, called the Torah or the Pentateuch. These five books were written by Moses. The fifth book, Deuteronomy, serves as something of a recap of the contents of the first four books. So Numbers, more or less, is the last book of the Torah, which is mostly new content. If you start here at the end, there's probably going to be a lot that you're missing. In fact, we've already considered 19.6% of the book of Numbers in our previous discussions. So even if you're only concerned with getting the full context of the book of Numbers, you won't get it if you start here. That said, this is a good time for a brief recap. In Genesis, God created a good world, but the people he created sinned. He punished them by flooding the world, and thereafter instituted the rudiments of law so that mankind could keep sin in check. He also chose Abraham to become the father of a nation of people, called Israel, who would ultimately restore the world. He promised that that nation would live in Canaan, which became known as the Promised Land. But at the beginning of the book of Exodus, those people found themselves enslaved in Egypt. God raised up Moses to lead the people out of slavery and into the Promised Land, and God delivered those people from Egypt by bringing plagues on the Egyptians and parting the sea for Israel to cross. Thereafter, the people of Israel divided up into 12 tribes, or 13, depending on how you reckon, and met with God on Mount Sinai, where he delivered his laws to Moses. God also selected Moses' tribe, the Levites, to serve as his priests. The Levites served God by teaching his laws and making animal sacrifices to him in the tabernacle, which was a large, portable tent temple. And today, the narrative continues. And that, I think, might come as a relief for some. Israel made it to Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 20, and that was about 47 chapters ago. Since then, most of what we've read has been concerned with the laws of God, with very little action interspersed. Well, today we get back to some action, and what's left of the book of Numbers will be mostly narrative. This week we start gearing up for action, so God gives the Israelites instructions about how they should arrange themselves for travel in the wilderness for their long trip to Canaan. And of note, my estimate is that it will take us about 16 weeks to finish Numbers. So look for us to wrap up the book at about the end of June 2019. If I recall correctly, it took us longer to get through three chapters of Exodus. So when I say that the pace is about to pick up, I'm not kidding you. Your passage for consideration, then, is Numbers chapters 1 through 3. If you haven't yet read the opening chapters of Numbers, I recommend that you pause and do so now. So if you came into this message not knowing why the book is called Numbers, well, now you know. Our English title Numbers translates the Greek arithmoi, which you may recognize as the root for our word arithmetic. That was not the name of the book in Hebrew. The Hebrews originally called this book, along with the other books of the Torah, by the first word in the text, in this case, Wadebir, meaning, and he said. Of course, Numbers makes a lot of sense to us, because the opening chapters are packed full of numbers, so when the text was translated into Greek, they called it arithmoi, and the rest is history. The first number we have here is a numbering of time. 13 months have passed since Israel left Egypt. Indeed, it has taken us longer to study Israel's stay at Mount Sinai than it took them to live it. The first year is over, and so now the people are in their second year and second month. And at that time, God spoke to Moses at the tent of meeting, likely the tabernacle, but possibly Moses' own tent, and God ordered him to take a census of the people of Israel, which of course is where the real numbers come into play. The census was to include all the men of Israel over 19 years of age, that is, everyone of fighting age. The people were to be listed by their ancestral tribes. To assist Moses in the census, God appointed one leader from each tribe. Who are these leaders of the 12 tribes? These helpers, evidently for the rest of that generation, remained as leaders of the tribes. As we go forward, we'll see the same people giving offerings on behalf of their tribes and also leading them on the march. Other than that, though, there isn't much context or significance that we can attach to them. One of them, Nashon, was great-great-grandfather of King David, and because his sister married Aaron, he was also brother-in-law to the high priest. His tribe, Judah, would ultimately become the most powerful of the tribes. Having a close connection to the priesthood obviously didn't hurt anything. But other than that, none of these characters are mentioned in any other context than as leaders of their respective tribes in the events of the Book of Numbers. So, these men were put in charge of counting, and evidently, during the course of a single day, the entire people of Israel were assembled and counted. Undoubtedly, the tribal heads each selected a large number of helpers, because there was a lot of counting to be done for one day. Most of the remainder of chapter 1 concerns itself with listing numbers of men in each tribe. It could feasibly have been done in a small chart with 12 rows of data entry, but the Book of Numbers has a way of being very detail-specific and repetitive. And of note, all these numbers will also be repeated in chapter 2 without any variance. So we'll try to be a bit quicker about it by making a list. Reuben had 46,500. Simeon had 59,300. Gad had 45,650. Judah had 74,600. Issachar had 54,400. Zebulun had 57,400. Ephraim had 40,500. Manasseh had 32,200. Benjamin had 35,400. Dan had 62,700. Asher had 41,500. Naphtali had 53,400. And Levi was not immediately counted. The count of the Levites occurs in chapter 3. This was evidently because the Levites were to be the keepers of the tabernacle. It was their job to set it up, service it, take it down, and transport it. The context suggests to us that this special duty made them unfit for battle, and since this was a census of all the fighting men, there was no need to count the Levites. So the grand total of all the fighting men aged 20 and above was 603,550. That number excludes women and children, and I would guess people who are disabled or so elderly that they can no longer be reasonably expected to sword fight. We note that all of the tribal numbers were rounded to the nearest 50, which means that the precise number could have been as much as 600 in either direction. That number, 603,550, is a number we have mentioned before, back on October 15th of 2017, because it nicely aligns with the round estimate of Israelites who crossed the Sea of Reeds as recorded in Exodus 12:37. And of course, it should go without saying, but in the modern world you have to. Women weren't counted because women, it is accepted as an undisputed point of nature, shouldn't serve in military combat roles under ordinary circumstances. Now, when the Levites were added to the count, there were 22,000 of them. You find that in chapter 3, verse 39. It isn't an apples-to-apples comparison with the other tribes of Israel, because this count included all the male Levites over a month old. Adding the numbers together in gross gives us a population of 625,550. However, we might try to massage that number a bit. Modern population distribution by age has it that about a third of the population is under 20. That would leave roughly 15,000 adult Levite men, making them the smallest tribe by far. They're about 20% of the size of Judah, the largest tribe, and maybe half the size of Manasseh, the next smallest tribe. When the entire adult male population is combined, there are about 618,000 people. If we suppose that there is one woman for every man, that number jumps to 1.2 million, and if a third of the population is too young to be counted, the number goes up again to around 1.8 million. That would make this population larger than that of modern Phoenix, Arizona, the fifth largest city in the United States. Now, we note that this is the first, but not the only, census of the people of Israel during their wanderings in the wilderness. This census was taken as the people prepared to set out from Mount Sinai on a quest to conquer the Promised Land. Well, spoiler alert, that first quest will fail, leaving Israel to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. When the wandering generation died out, their children ultimately went on to conquer Canaan. So as there had been a military census in the lead-up to the first invasion of Canaan, so 40 years later there was another census in the lead-up to the second invasion. This one also counted adult men capable of fighting. And of note, it included Levi this time. I suppose I can't give you a clear reason for that. In this census, the numbers were as follows. Reuben, 43,700, down 2,770 men. Simeon, 22,200, down 37,100 men. Gad, 40,500, down 5,150. Judah, 76,500, up 1,900. Issachar, 64,300 men, up 9,900. Zebulun, 60,500, up 3,100. Ephraim, 32,500, down 8,000. Manasseh, 52,700, up 20,500. Benjamin, 45,600, up 10,200. Dan, 64,400, up 1,700. Asher, 53,400, up 11,900. Naphtali, 45,400, down 8,000. And Levi, including children, 23,000, up 1,000. With the exception of Reuben, those numbers appear to be rounded to the nearest 100. Reuben, for whatever reason, appears to have rounded to the nearest 10. The net change, using the most precise numbers we have, was only a loss of 820 people, though with these rounded numbers, that could go about 1,100 in either direction. So we might as well just list no meaningful change. Among the tribes, Levi experienced the least change, gaining only 1,000 people in 40 years. They remained the smallest tribe, as they had been at the first. The biggest change was in Simeon, which lost 37,100 people. That was over 62% of their entire population. At the first census, Simeon was the third largest tribe, but the wilderness was particularly hard on them. By the time of the second census, Simeon was the second smallest after Levi. We note that chapter 26 required that each tribe of Israel receive an allotted amount of land in proportion to their size, Levi excluded since they were the priests. Well, Levi and his brother Simeon ended up being the two smallest, and ultimately Levi would receive no inheritance, while Simeon's inheritance would be small and landlocked inside the territory of Judah. Eventually, the tribe of Simeon would blend into Judah to such an extent as to lose their distinct identity. Manasseh gained the most, with an increase of 63,000, or 20,500 people. That didn't make them the biggest, though. Judah was still bigger by a long shot, and several others were bigger as well. Of note, only three of the adult males who had been counted in the first census were counted in the second one: Moses, Joshua, and Caleb. Everyone else had died in the years between. Skipping back to Numbers chapter 2, we next consider the arrangement of the camp. This was a very large number of people to move through the wilderness, and they were going to need order to do it. The tabernacle, surrounded by the Levites who kept it, would be at the center of the camp. The other 12 tribes would be arranged around the Levites, facing the tabernacle, with three tribes in each of the cardinal directions. They would remain in their tribal groups, each under the banner of his ancestral house. The tribes would be positioned based on their prominence as sons of Israel, who was also called Jacob. This would take into consideration their birth orders, the orders in which their mothers married Israel, and the events in their lives, which sometimes brought them shame, and that would determine how they would be grouped. And make note, it is clear that ancestral history and tribal preeminence were the objective here. The tribes could have, for instance, been grouped in other ways. For example, God could have made an effort to distribute the population evenly around the tabernacle to keep things from being lopsided. The most, even, that I could come up with kept all of the sides within a 38,000-person window at all times, while the actual window of God's grouping is more than double that. But he didn't group the tribes based on numbers. The sons would be grouped based primarily on who their mothers were. The sons of Leah would be on one side and the sons of Rachel on the opposite side. The sons of the concubines would also be grouped. The east was the most favored position, toward the sunrise, and it was occupied by Israel's leading sons, Judah, Zebulun, and Issachar. We have mentioned before, see a message titled Leah and Rachel Compete, Childbirth Tribes of Israel, published on November 20th, 2016, that Leah was the first and best of Jacob's wives, and her sons were the most legitimate heirs. Of those six sons, we recall that the eldest, Reuben, fell from favor after he slept with one of his father's concubines. Simeon and Levi likewise fell from grace after they slaughtered the men of Shechem. Judah, Zebulun, and Issachar therefore remained then as the leading sons, and they therefore take the favored place. When the nation started marching toward the promised land, this group would go first. Levi, of course, would be in the middle. As for the other two disgraced sons, they would take their place on the south beside Gad, the son of Zilpah. Zilpah was Israel's last and least wife, so we take it that this is a position of some disgrace for those who would have been the firstborn. Of note, this disgraced tribal trio was the only trio to decline in population during their wanderings in the wilderness, and they declined heavily, losing 45,020 people. While not all of the other tribes gained people, all of the other tribal trios did grow in population. In contrast, the favored trio grew significantly. They did not grow as much as Israel's favorite trio on the west, but they were, both at the outset and by the end of the wanderings, the largest group by far. When the nation started marching toward the Promised Land, this group would go second. Opposite Judah and the other preeminent sons, on the west are the sons of Rachel. Those were Joseph's sons Ephraim and Manasseh, as well as Joseph's brother Benjamin. Those were Israel's favorite descendants, but not the preeminent. When the nation started marching, this group went third. The other sons of the concubines, Dan and Naphtali, both sons of Bilhah, and Asher, son of Zilpah, were in the north. When the nation started marching, this group went fourth. So this organization led to there being anywhere from 100 to 200,000 men on each side, three tribes on each side in each of the cardinal directions, with Levi in the middle. Moving on to chapter 3, we consider an important financial transaction relevant to all these numbers. Previously, God selected the line of Aaron, brother of Moses, for his priesthood. In today's passage, God decided to buy up the entire tribe of Levi to work in his service. As it stands, they are free people, but God is going to purchase them so that they can work for him. Now, how does he plan to do that? He's going to make a trade. And what is he going to trade with? You will recall that God killed all the firstborn sons of Egypt while sparing the firstborn sons of Israel. As an enduring reminder of this event, God required that all the people of Israel should bring their firstborn sons to the tabernacle and devote them to his service. They would then pay a redemption fee to buy the children back from God. See Exodus 13, or our message, Plagues of Egypt, Part 4, from October 8, 2017, for the command about dedicating the firstborn, and Leviticus 27, or our message, Vows, from February 3, 2019, for more information about redeeming dedicated people. So Israel owes their firstborn sons for God's service, and God is going to take those people, and rather than having the Israelites buy their sons back with silver, he'll give the firstborn sons in exchange for the tribe of Levi. In Numbers chapter 3, verse 43, Moses numbers all of the firstborn sons as 22,273 people. That number, if you are particularly astute, might raise your eyebrows, because it seems like a surprisingly small number of firstborn sons in such a large population. This need not trouble us, though. Evidently, these are only the firstborn sons born in the 14 months since Israel walked out of Egypt. Evidently, 3.6% of Israel's male population became fathers for the first time in the course of that year. That's a number which is not at all difficult to swallow. So the transaction was made. 22,000 firstborn Israelite babies were traded for the entire tribe of Levi, and all the firstborn cattle, which were unnumbered, from among the tribes were traded with all of Levi's cattle. There were 273 baby boys left over after the exchange, though. These were traded back to Israel at the normal redemption price described in Leviticus 27, that is, 5 shekels per head. The money, as is expected in such a redemption transfer, went to Aaron, in the amount of 1,365 shekels. As for what he's going to do with all the Levites, well, we'll get to that next week, along with a more thorough tally of them. So, now you know why they call it numbers. The nation of Israel is about to get up and move on from their lengthy stay at Mount Sinai, and the first step is to prepare themselves for the conquest of Canaan by performing a census and arranging themselves for a long march through the wilderness. And in the course of taking that census, we ran into a lot of numbers, particularly the numbers of people by tribe, numbers of people by the place in which they camp, numbers of people in silver used in an exchange with God, and numbers describing the passage of time. And we'll have even more numbers next week when we dig into the duties of the Levites. The census was conducted by God's hand-chosen tribal heads of Israel. These people will appear a few more times in the book of Numbers, but have little other significance. Beyond that, we looked into the arrangement of Israel's camp, which gave us a glimpse into Israelite culture and its heavy emphasis on the history of the tribes, which marked some as more prominent than others. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.